Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 50 degrees and overcast. Today's Friday, September 14th, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. Dallas Peavy might best be known in Sitka for running the local softball association. Now he's hoping to be a team player with another group in town, the Sitka Assembly. Today we conclude our series profiling the five candidates for Assembly. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
Dallas Peavy came to Sitka in 1989. He was 10 years old and lived in a few other places, but something always drew him back here.
I've tried Washington. That's where I was before I came here. Went back down there, moved to Juneau for a while, and tried California, and I don't know, nothing felt like home like here.
He works as a driver for Stranger Sanitation.
Utility player for the company, pretty much. So a little bit of everything. Outside of work, I'm a father of three. I like to play sports. I run the Sitka Softball Association. I'm the commissioner of that, which is almost a full-time job during the summer.
And he says he's running for Assembly because Sitka is heading in the wrong direction on a variety of issues.
You know, infrastructure for one. Our roads are falling apart, which I don't understand. We have enough tax coming in, and I don't know what the gas tax is, but I'm sure that's supposed to go towards road repair and everything that I hear. You know, we're looking towards maybe going back to gravel roads, and I know nobody wants that.
The city's road needs stretch into the millions of dollars and far outpace the collection of any revenue. Without help, some have suggested many of Sitka's paved roads could revert to gravel. Peavy says that would be a mistake.
You drive down those roads that are like Smith Street or the end of Jarvis or anything like that, and they're just pothole ridden, and you can go over them as much as you want, but those potholes are always going to come back, and it's just going to, you know, damage cars more. And
Sitka officials have unsuccessfully tried to get more money for the roads by asking voters to issue bonds or raise property taxes. And they've postponed another plan to add a biannual motor vehicle fee. It would be $200 every 2 years for a regular passenger vehicle.
I own three cars, so, you know, $600, that's a big chunk out of your pocket. But if it goes towards the roads themselves and not towards, like, the general fund or anything like that, I don't see a big problem with that. I mean, it's only every couple years.
On fiscal issues, Peavy positions himself in the middle. For example, the annual struggle the Assembly has with the city budget, whether to cut, whether to tax, or do something in between.
I mean, there is some places that we can cut. I'm sure there's a bunch of people that don't agree with that, obviously, because they'll lose a job. But there's some, it seems like we have a lot of employees, and it doesn't really seem like we need that many. You know, we are a small town. I don't want to point fingers or anything, but we definitely need to make some cuts and maybe increase a little bit of a tax. A little of both.
Things are a little clearer for him when it comes to education funding. Assembly members annually decide what amount of money they will send to the school district. The minimum and maximum amounts they can contribute are set by state law. Peavy's three children are 5, 7, and 11, and in debates over school funding, Peavy says he leans more toward the school's needs.
We don't need to be going towards having 35 kids to one teacher or anything like that. It's hard enough. I had a hard time growing up in school, you know, trying to get the attention or, you know, just one-on-one help.
And he says by cutting the contribution to the schools, the Assembly could make things harder for a lot of students. It's three students in particular who are on Peavy's mind when it comes to the future of the community at large.
I want this town to be around for my kids, grandkids, or great-grandkids to be able to experience this place.
This is Peavy's first run for office, but he believes he has a lot to contribute.
I'm definitely new to politics, but I am definitely a hard worker and will try my hardest to do whatever I can to be a team player for sure.
Peavy shares the Assembly ballot with Aaron Swanson, Michelle Putz, Phyllis Hackett, and Matt Hunter. Voters will choose three to serve. The municipal election is October 2nd. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
You can hear all these profiles on our website, kcaw.org, and you can ask your questions of the candidates next week. They'll be in our studio Monday from 6:35 until 8 p.m., taking your calls live on the air. Correction to a story that aired last week during this newscast. We said mayoral candidate Tor Christensen's previous term on the assembly was from 1998 until 2001. In fact, he served until 2004, two full terms prior to his most recent election in 2010. A correct version of the story aired in the evening and can be found on our website, kcaw.org. A new study is adding another dimension to the sea otter debate. The research shows the marine mammals help reduce carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, a major contributor to climate change. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Jim Estes remembers taking a look around the bottom of Sitka Sound about 20 years ago.
When we were diving in that area back in the early 90s, the seafloor was just covered with urchins, and there was virtually no kelp. There was urchins everywhere. 2 years ago, when we went back and looked at the same sites, there was not an urchin to be found, and there was kelp everywhere.
Estes is a professor of ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of California campus in Santa Cruz. His latest research takes a look at kelp forests and how much carbon dioxide they absorb. The otter connection comes because they eat sea urchins, which in turn eat kelp. Working with other researchers, Estes took a look at coastal waters with no sea otters and those with a full population.
The effects of sea otters in that system on carbon dioxide concentration would be significant. And by significant, I mean whether or not you have otters in the system would account for roughly an estimated approximately 10% of the total carbon. That's a lot.
And by cutting carbon dioxide, otters also reduce ocean acidification, which results from CO2 dissolving in water.
That's a whole other area of work that we and others have been looking at. But if, for example, you look at pH, which is a measure of acidification, and you measure it inside a kelp forest and then, say, a couple hundred yards away, it's always higher within the kelp forest, which means that the acidification level is lower.
He wants to be clear that the changes would only be in affected coastal areas, not worldwide. Otter populations are booming in southeast Alaska, and that's brought a lot of attention from fishermen, economists, and biologists. The new study focuses on waters from southern British Columbia to the end of the Aleutian Islands. Southeast and most other areas lost their populations to Russian and American hunters about a century ago. Otters were reintroduced over the past 50 years. In an earlier interview, Phil Doherty of the Southeast Alaska Dive Fisheries Association said their rapid spread and voracious appetite hits his members hard.
The areas that are the most affected are the areas that have the largest food source, and those are the species that we harvest, and those are sea urchins, sea cucumbers, and gooey duck clams.
Sea otters are a protected species, and only Alaska natives can hunt them. There are also strict limits on how their pelts can be sold or used. Some commercial fishermen and native groups have called for measures allowing more to be harvested. Otter supporters have fought for continued protection, in part because kelp forests offer shelter that boosts salmon, herring, and rockfish populations. The new research adds to those arguments, but Estes doesn't want to exaggerate impacts on the planet's overall carbon dioxide levels.
It's going to be pretty small. We haven't made that calculation, but, you know, this is just a teeny little part of the world. And so I don't think the story really is relevant on a global scale. It just demonstrates a process on a local scale.
The study first appeared in the publication Frontiers in Ecology and the Environment. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
You can read more about the study and access our past sea otter reports through links posted with this story on our website, kcaw.org. Commercial fishing boats, tenders, and floating processors that operate more than 3 miles offshore will soon have to get safety exams every 2 years. Until now, those dockside exams were voluntary. Under the Coast Guard Authorization Act of 2010, they will be mandatory after October 16th, according to Ken Lawrenson, the Fishing Vessel Safety Coordinator for the Coast Guard in Alaska.
Congress required the Coast Guard to write regulations to mandate dockside safety exams and that the vessel be issued a certificate of compliance when it has successfully completed that dockside exam for any and all commercial fishing vessels that is fishing or operating more than 3 miles from the territorial sea baseline.
Alaska's had much higher participation in the voluntary exam program than elsewhere in the country. However, Lawrenson thinks there are still many boats around the state that have not taken part and will need to do so by the time it becomes a requirement in mid-October.
While there are areas, Ketchikan, Juneau, Petersburg, for example, a lot of the Kodiak boats, where we reach a very high percentage of the fleet, there's still going to be a lot of folks, I think, out there that have been waiting. Maybe they've heard about this this deadline coming up. Those folks need to contact their local Coast Guard. They need to set up those dockside exams.
For more information or to sign up for an exam, you can contact any Coast Guard office or visit www.fishsafe.info, F-I-S-H-S-A-F-E. Brown bear hunting season in southeast Alaska is set to open tomorrow. The opening is in Game Management Unit 4, which encompasses the ABC Islands, Admiralty, Baranof, and Chichagof. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game says the season will run through December 31st. According to officials, hunters have to have a valid hunting license and a locking big game tag. Hunters also must have a current registration permit, which is valid for taking one brown bear within the unit. Non-resident hunters must be accompanied by a guide. The total limit for the hunt is 43 bears, 35 males, and 8 females. Sun weather forecast today for Sitka and Port Alexander calls for showers, highs around 56, southwest winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy, scattered showers, lows around 46. Tomorrow, cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 58, south winds 10 miles per hour. This is KCAW in Sitka.